From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Last night, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama duked it out in one more debate. We're going to talk a little later to people who can put what they said in perspective, but first, we are digging into one of the biggest national and international issues, the mortgage crisis. Thousands of homeowners have mortgages greater than what their homes are worth. A new bill aims to change that, but at what expense to the economy? With us, we've got Melissa Harris-Lacewell, a professor of politics and African American studies at Princeton, and Robert Tranum, D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. He's at our NPR headquarters in Washington. Hi, folks.
Hi, Farai.
So, Robert, let me start with you. The bill aims to ease the strain on borrowers, reducing their payment obligations to the market price of their home. That could be good news for folks who've got mortgages, but is it going to be good news for the economy? What do you think?
Well, you know, you're right. It's good news potentially for the homeowners, but it's not so good news for the lending associations out there, where candidly speaking, they're going to say, well, wait a minute. You took out this loan for a certain amount. Now, regardless of what your house is worth, this is how much you owe us. So it's not so good for the economy overall, because most financial individuals would say, you know what, we need that money to go back into the economy. We need people to be in debt to a certain degree so that that fuels the economy. Republicans also in Capitol Hill, Farai, are also balking at this. And candidly speaking, I'm not sure this actually has enough steam to pass the United States House and the United States Senate.
Melissa, first of all, what do you think of the proposal? And secondly, do you think it's going to pass?
Ultimately, I actually think that this is not a good proposal. I'm one of those people who really hates the story of the prodigal son, where the guy gets to go out and make a mess, and when he comes back, the father kills a fatted calf for him and makes happy.
you're just bitter.
I am a little irritated, actually, because, of course, there are many things that we invest in which could, in fact, lose value. Everything from our stocks and bonds to, let's even say it, our college education.
And not to mention that big screen TV.
Right. I mean, plenty of things in which that we take out debt for which are worth less after we bring them home, everybody's new car that they're driving, right? But we actually don't correct that by going through and changing your level of indebtedness. You are indebted on the day that you sign the contract. And I think there are very real reasons why we don't want to engage in a circumstance where we're telling lending institutions that the government's going to come in or allow judges to come in and shift that accountability. I think that's exactly not what we want. Now, there are real things the government can do to provide relief, but I think that this is a bad idea.
May I touch on that for a second?
Mm-hmm.
It actually also sets a very, very bad precedent for judges, where they can say, well, you know what, we did it for this case, we should do it for this case. It creates a slippery slope where many Republicans on Capitol Hill say, you know what, enough is enough. She is exactly right, where, you know, you have an obligation, regardless of whether it's a good obligation or a bad obligation, to repay your debt, regardless of how much that is. And a lot of folks on Capitol Hill are saying, well, wait a minute here. We are all you should be responsible adults, number one. But also, number two, there is a sense of responsibility that's on your part where you have to pay that debt back regardless of how much you owe.
But let me put it in this context. Robert first and then Melissa. There are things called corporate write-downs. There are ways for corporations to deal with losses in the short term and mid-range that regular human folks don't have. Is it a case of saying, well, okay, we're doing a write-down here and letting the chips fall where they may?
Yes and no. I mean, the only other good thing about this is that regardless of how much in debt you are with your house, traditionally, you always get your return back on your house. Now, you may not get that return back in the next 5 or 6 or 7 years, but over the lifespan of your mortgage, whether it be 20 or 30 years, you typically get your money back in some way, shape, or form. So it's slightly different, although I see your point, Farai.
Melissa?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But I don't think we solve the problem of corporate welfare or of, you know, the sort of corporate buyouts by then extending bad policy to broader groups. In fact, I think we simply should draw back some of the ways in which we undergird corporations, which also fail to live up to their debt burdens. Now, I'm not saying that no one should intervene, that everybody should just take their loss and, you know, go on about it. But part of what happened here was the ways in which the unregulated market or the deregulation of the market allowed a kind of gaming system for those who were providing mortgages, so that many people ended up in mortgages that they simply should never have been in from the beginning. If instead we look back at kind of a post-World War II model, where what we did was make housing more affordable by providing a variety of subsidies to get families into homes that they could actually afford. Yes, it reduced a profit margin, but it created a more stable circumstance in which we now have people who are in their fourth generation of profiting from those early FHA homes.
Let me move on to something else more election-related. Senator Christopher Dodd threw his weight behind Barack Obama this week. The senator from Connecticut pulled out of the presidential race after the Iowa caucuses, and he's worried that the Democrats are taking too long to pick a nominee. He basically says if the nomination goes on too long, the Democrats are going to infight and lose. Melissa, do you think that that's a real risk?
Well, I certainly think it's a real risk to imagine that the Democratic Party can certainly win this election. They might win it, but this is in some ways the Republican Party's election to lose, even though it seems like how is it possible that John McCain could beat either one of these two, people who are still standing, either Clinton or Obama. So I do think that Dodd's right, that now is time to start thinking about questions of the electability of the candidate as well as kind of what's good for the party in a broader sense. This not just a presidential election year. We are also voting for the U.S. House of Representatives, for a third of the U.S. Senate, and extremely importantly, for the state houses, state legislatures, and governorships, which will be critical for redrawing in 2010, during the time of the census, redrawing these districts. It can't be just that our candidate wins. It's got to be that the whole party wins.
Robert, when you take a look at Senator Dodd, he's also a superdelegate. Is that going to have any influence, his decision to support Obama, on the other superdelegates, or even just his question about whether or not the Democrats are going to set themselves on fire?
Yes. He not only is a superdelegate, but he also is a former chairman of the DNC under the previous Clinton administration. He's an elder in the party. He is a senior senator from Connecticut. He has been around the block more than once. He is exactly right. All of my Republican friends are telling me that they are just salivating at this fight on the Democratic side, where literally they have popped open, the soda pop and popped some popcorn, because this is an absolutely fascinating conversation that the Democrats are having amongst themselves, as opposed to you go forward with hope and change with Senator Obama, or do you go with experience with Senator Clinton? Senator Dodd is exactly right. If, in fact, this continues to go on, to use Howard Dean's terminology, he'll have to probably bring both sides into a room so they can actually hash this out before a brokered convention, because it looks like that's exactly where this is going.
Well, what about the Republican side? Senator McCain was, he wasn't always a shoo-in. He was struggling for a while, and he actually applied for federal funds. Instead of actually taking them, he used it as collateral so that he could have his own money. Now the Democrats are basically beefing, and they want the government to see if McCain exceeded his spending limits. This is all about campaign finance law, and Senator McCain has been in the middle of it as a legislator. Do you think he's broken any rules, either legally or morally?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because from a legal standpoint, it appears that Senator McCain has not broken any laws. From a moral and ethical standpoint, that's a different story. Senator McCain has always backed all of his candidacies for the presidency when he ran him back in 2000, also when he ran for the United States Senate for reelection, on this premise, if you will, that he is better on the issues when it comes to campaign finance reform. My goodness, he is the one who authored campaign finance reform back in 1998 with Russ Feingold. So this is a very interesting dilemma that he's in, at least from a rhetorical standpoint, although Senator Obama, to be fair, also said that if, in fact, he was going to be running for president, this was 8 months ago when no one thought that he would have a shot at the Democratic nomination, that he would also accept public financing. And now it appears that Senator Obama is reneging on that promise. So, there's a little bit of he said, she said there, and to use Senator McCain's words, there is some Washington doublespeak on both sides.
What's really the impact? I mean, when we talk about financing, Melissa, there's been a lot of question of whether the U.S. should move towards a model more like other nations where there's more public financing, including for advertising, which is really the biggest expense in these campaigns. How does Senator Obama, as well as Senator McCain's position, really reflect on what we're doing as a country in terms of supporting the candidates to run a clean, fair election?
Well, I think there's two interesting things here. I mean, this point is exactly right, that McCain and Obama are, if they end up running against each other in the general election, are actually going to be competing for who can run the cleanest campaign, because both of them have sort of set themselves up as different from traditional partisans, cleaner, fairer, all of those kinds of things. So it'll be fascinating to watch them throw mud about who's less clean. It'll be fascinating to watch. But I think this question of financing goes to the heart of the kind of question of, you know, our democratic politics with a little d. Will we actually be able to cultivate a leadership base that looks more like the American public? Has everything to do with our campaign financing. We know that, for example, the reason that women are largely shut out of office from dog catcher to the Senate has everything to do with their inability to raise large amounts of money, not necessarily with their qualifications as a candidate. We know that one of the reasons that African Americans have been largely centered in predominantly black districts is they find it difficult to raise the money necessary to run statewide campaigns. When black candidates who are highly effective do in fact get the money, people like Deval Patrick or in this case now Barack Obama, they actually are competitive. So, you know, our ability to have a more diverse and a more fair democratic political system has everything to do with making it cheaper to run for all of these offices. And again, really, dog catcher to the White House, it's not just a problem at the top.
Robert, very quickly, do you think that more public funding is a good thing and more candidates taking it is a good thing?
Overall, I believe it is, simply because you have much more transparency. You know exactly where the money is coming from. You know exactly who's giving it. It also, frank, candidly speaking, gives everyone an equal playing field. Will we ever get there? I don't think so.
Robert and Melissa, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Melissa Harris-Lacewell is a professor of politics and African American studies at Princeton, and Robert Trainum is the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CN8. He joined me from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C.